Hello, and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 72, Soldiers of Misfortune. I am your host, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host, Scott Michella.
Hi, Chris.
Howdy. We are back, of course, once again to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. And wouldn't you know it, we've got another big anniversary that just occurred. We had the 10th anniversary of Nintendo's Wii console just a few days ago. So that's going to be our big topic this week. But before we get to that, we will start off with some news and impressions. Specifically, let's kick it off with the season's arguably biggest release, Pokemon Sun and Moon. Now, Scott, you didn't pick this up, right?
I didn't. So many people talking about it, though. You would think it was... It's funny, this is technically the third Pokemon game on the 3DS, right?
You're right. It is the third mainline release on the 3DS. And I've certainly been playing it. I wasn't able to play it quite as much as I wanted to because my Amazon order did not arrive on launch day on Friday. It came on Sunday instead. But as soon as I was able to start playing on Sunday, I played, you know, pretty much nonstop for like 8 or 10 hours.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to know what's going on. I wanted to, you know, be able to talk about the year's biggest release. And the good news is I am definitely enjoying it. I'm having a lot of fun. I mean, I'm not the world's biggest Pokemaster or anything like that. Most of the previous games I haven't finished, so I can't talk about all the nuances. But I'm certainly enjoying this one quite a bit, and it does feel more different from previous releases than what the demo led on. For one thing, it feels more like a traditional Japanese RPG than your typical Pokemon game, in my opinion. In a sense, it's a little like Gale of Darkness on GameCube, if you happen to remember that one. I mean, it's still definitely Pokemon at the core, but it just feels just a little bit more like your traditional RPG than just a Pokemon game.
Oh, that's interesting. Because I assume Pokemon's been around for so long that fan service has to creep into these games at a certain point, right? Stuff that, like, oh, here's a thing for old fans of Pokemon. Do you see anything in there that scratches that itch?
Oh, well, there's definitely that stuff in there. I mean, I haven't got to it yet, but Red and Blue, the characters from the original Pokemon games, they are in there. So that's like pretty much the ultimate fan service, having these characters return all grown up.
Yeah.
I think they challenge you to some epic battles or something like that. And of course, there's lots of returning Pokemon as well. So as I was saying, the story is definitely one of the aspects that makes this game stand out. You know, you're saved by this special Pokemon early on, and there's this girl named Lily, and she's got some special Pokemon. And so right off the bat, they're throwing all this interesting stuff in the mix. It's not just, you know, I'm going to go out and become the very best and catch them all. And of course, that's sort of there. It's underneath everything else that's going on. But you're going out there and you're undergoing these trials on the Alolan Islands. And you ultimately are going through a lot of the similar motions, but the way they present it just makes it feel very fresh and very different. And I expect it's only going to get way more epic from there. But in addition to the changes they made to the story to make it a little more like a traditional RPG, like I said, the island setting, I think, is also, you know, very interesting. And again, you know, adds more variety than the demo was letting on. Because in the demo, you know, you're in a city, and it's like, oh, this could kind of be any city, and so on and so forth. But now that I'm able to explore more of the islands, it really does, I think, make a big difference. I did pick Litten as my starter, of course. That is the fiery cat Pokemon, and it is now evolved to its second form. Hasn't turned into a burly pro wrestler yet, but it's a bigger, more rough and tough cat, or meow and tough cat, maybe I should say. I did get a Rockruff, though. That's definitely, I think, one of the most visually appealing Pokemon from the new game. That's the stone-based dog critter. And it's also a lot of fun seeing the new forms of old Pokemon. You know, for some reason, I'm a big fan of the Rattata, and they have new Alolan Rattatas, even. And new Alolan Raticates that they evolve into. So I'm enjoying all that stuff. And Scott, if you haven't played a lot of these, you'd probably be glad to know that it's very user-friendly. You get an experience-sharing item very early on, which makes it a lot easier to level up some of your Pokemon. And after you fight a Pokemon once, you are shown in the subsequent times you battle it, what moves are effective or ineffective. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to just remember all that stuff. So it's just all there presented to you.
Yeah.
Very, very convenient.
Yeah, I remember XY being super confusing, especially for me, somebody who's new to the franchise. For the most part, there were a lot of online features I didn't really understand. And
I haven't tried those out yet.
And I wasn't sure what was important and what I should ignore. And that was frustrating for me, at least. It's silly to, you know, this is a game for children, and it's confusing to an adult, but yeah.
Yeah, I admit there's still a lot of features I haven't tried out. I haven't done anything online yet, and I'm only off of the first island. I did the first trial. I beat the first Kahuna, and then, you know, I went off. I spent a ton of time just exploring and trying to catch extra Pokemon, doing a couple little optional side quests that NPCs give you. So I probably could have done this in about half the time that I did it. But it's fun just, you know, exploring and seeing new stuff. After you beat the Kahuna, then you can get a Taurus to ride on. That's the bull Pokemon. You can ride on its back and explore the island and smash through rocks and get to new areas. And that's a lot of fun, too. I'm also really liking the music. The music is very, very good. The graphics are pretty good too, but you know, you will definitely notice that lack of 3D. I mean, there are so many times where it's like, man, this looks so much better in 3D. And even, you know, you would think that, okay, if you can't do it when you're exploring, you can't do it in battles. Yeah. You could at least do it in some of the scenes, like where you're, you know, petting and playing with your Pokemon and nothing's going on. They're really simple. But no, I haven't seen a single bit of 3D at all.
I think one of the bigger issues I have when there is no 3D is you're looking at half the resolution of the screen. You know, when you do 3D, you're not, each eye gets different pixels. So you're seeing almost double the amount of pixels. I know that sounds ridiculous, but it's true. So if you look at it in 2D, I'm instantly aware of the fact that this is a super low resolution screen. I mean, it's one of the most low resolution screens that I look at on a daily basis. So.
Well, I certainly don't think it's a bad-looking game, but yeah, you'll totally notice some low-resolution textures, especially if they do close-ups of anything.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
it's definitely a shame. And you know, at first I was thinking, you know, maybe it's because of all the changing camera angles that they couldn't do 3D or something like that. But then you look at a game like Ocarina of Time 3D or Majora's Mask, and those seem just as complex, and you know, they do the 3D beautifully. So I don't know what the deal is.
Yeah, I don't either.
But even so, I'm having a really fun time with it. It's a, you know, very enjoyable RPG, and I think it's safe to say it is probably going to be my all-time favorite Pokemon game.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's very, very good. I wish I could say more. I wish I could say I'd, you know, explored all the islands and tried out all the other features, but I just haven't been able to do that yet. But yeah, so far, so good. Moving on from there, I also wanted to mention another new release. Technically, it's not a new game release, but some more of the expansions were made available for LEGO Dimensions. And I did pick up one of those. I picked up the Sonic Level Pack.
Does this come with an actual packet of LEGOs that you could build a Sonic with?
Oh, yes. Yes, it does. Oh, that's cool. The main thing.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
It comes with an actual minifigure of Sonic the Hedgehog himself. It comes with a buildable version of Tails' plane and also the car that Sonic uses, I think, in All-Star Race. I don't know why Sonic needs a car, since he runs faster than a car can go.
Yeah.
But it comes with all that stuff. And yes, it does unlock new levels and stuff in the game, which I haven't tried out. All I've done is build the Sonic minifigure. In fact, I haven't built the car or the plane yet because, unlike the last batch, the instructions for these are not online. They're only in the game.
Oh,
and I
weird.
Don't actually own the game yet.
Yeah, I wonder if by just looking at pictures of it, you could figure out how to put it together.
Possibly. And I think people have already like taken videos of the instructions. They're on the screen, so I could find it online if I wanted to, but not in the form that it should be. I mean, I'm sure they'll be up eventually, but yeah, it's kind of weak that they're not. But it's really cool having a Sonic, you know, mini Lego figure. That's pretty neat. He's hanging out with a Mr. T minifigure right now. I posted a picture of them hanging out together eating chili dogs on Twitter while Marty McFly looks on longingly in the background.
That's great. Oh, man.
So check that out if you can. Hopefully, with Black Friday, I'll be able to find some great deal on the LEGO Dimensions starter set, and I can finally have this game, and I can actually have Mr. T and Sonic palling around in the actual game itself.
Oh, that's right. You don't actually own this game.
No. No, I don't. I'm not the biggest fan of the LEGO games. So. Yeah. But, you know, I had to get Sonic. I had to get the A-Team. So I've got those just waiting to pick up the game and try them out.
I think the vehicles look cooler than Sonic.
I mean, the vehicles do look cool. I haven't had a chance to see them in person yet. It is kind of weird seeing the totally authentic-looking Sonic head on a LEGO body. And I do wish that the ring were cooler. It's yellow and it's not smooth. It's a really bizarre ring. Yeah. I wish they'd just gone with something more straightforward and simple. I understand why it's got that little handhold. Yeah, that's weird.
And in the picture, it looks like it's going to be glittery and shiny, and it's just kind of just yellow with a little bit of a
flat yellow. Yeah. So that part's kind of weak. Anyway, I'm pretty happy with the minifigure. That's what I can say about this right now. But speaking of LEGO, did you hear the news from Warner Brothers about LEGO City Undercover?
No, I didn't.
Well, it is now officially confirmed to be coming to the Nintendo Switch.
So this is like the second game we know of now? Is that right? How many do we
know? I think there are at least three or four other confirmed games. Okay. No, there's definitely more than that. There's a new Splatoon, new Mario Kart. Mm. We know there's definitely a new Mario game. We know there's Zelda. We know there is a new Sonic game. Mm-hmm. Square Enix has confirmed, I think, Dragon Quest, at least, overseas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get a LEGO game.
Well, this is LEGO City Undercover, the same game that was released on Wii U. So it's another port.
Oh, I don't like where this is headed. I don't like this at all. It's kind of
weak sauce. You know, we were just talking about, what ports we wanted to see 2 weeks ago. This was definitely not on my list.
But I don't want to see on launch day just a whole bunch of games I could already be playing.
Right, totally. That's I completely agree.
Annoying. Mm-hmm. Maybe they've made it super easy to port old games to the new system, and maybe that's why people are getting on this, like, let's just port a game over. Oh, man. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I mean, it's not only coming to Switch. They're also bringing it out on PS4, Xbox One, and Steam. Mm-hmm. So, if they're doing that, I'm glad they're not leaving Switch out. But, yeah, like you said, I don't want to just be playing last gen's greatest hits when this thing debuts. So, we shall see. Did you ever play the original LEGO City Undercover?
No, I didn't. Did you?
No, I did not. I heard good things about it. I heard it's one of the better LEGO games out there. So, that's kind of good to know. Mm-hmm. But, like you said, I'd much rather be hearing, it's a brand new game. It's, LEGO City Undercover 2 or something like that. That would be a lot more fun, in my opinion. What you gonna do?
I don't know. I'm afraid. I hope everybody doesn't get on this, like, let's give all the new Switch users our old games. With worse graphics. I mean, I don't expect this thing to be a powerhouse.
It's gonna look better than the Wii U game, man. Come on. Ooh, it's definitely not gonna look worse.
I don't know. I don't think we're gonna get much better than what the Wii U looks like. I think this is a portable Wii U, to be honest.
Yeah, it's not gonna be worse. No way, Jose.
I'm afraid.
I'll bet my beard on it.
All right. We still don't even know if the thing has a touchscreen yet.
We still do not.
Which we assume it doesn't.
I'm assuming it does.
I feel like I'm being set up for disappointment here, but
I predict they're not going backwards. I predict there will still be touch. Yeah. I predict there will still be motion. And I predict it will be a step up over Wii U technology-wise. But I guess we'll see when we get all the official word in January. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we should take an intermission now. And then when we come back, we'll discuss this week's big topic, which is the 10th anniversary of the Wii. All right, we are back and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is a retrospective on the 10-year anniversary of the Nintendo Wii. 10 years already. Does it feel like it to you?
It does. I mean, when you... For me, it does. You know, there are very few of these Wiis still connected to people's televisions. And when you look, this thing launched with old technology, so it just feels so much older.
Well, it was basically just mildly enhanced GameCube technology, but with one big major addition. It added motion. That was the big thing.
It added motion, exactly. They had a gimmick, and the gimmick was a game changer.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
So what did you think when you heard about all this stuff initially, when they first announced the gimmick, when they first announced the name? What were your thoughts at the time?
I was excited. I didn't know how I was going to be playing games with this new system. The controller was two-handed deal. Your left hand and your right hand, operated independently. So there was no gamepad to speak of, and that was pretty shocking.
It was a little scary. It was like,
what are they doing? How's this going to work?
Yeah, are they going to throw away everything that we've been doing for the last, 15, 20 years or whatever?
And then I was thinking, oh, well, this is a real departure from what the other consoles are doing. So are we going to be getting their games? Because how is a game like, BioShock going to work with this weird, controller setup? Or are they going to make a version of BioShock that I can play with a Wii controller? And of course, that didn't happen.
Well, it certainly didn't with BioShock, over the years, they did give us a bunch of, watered down versions specifically made for Wii.
Yeah, and
we didn't get Dead Space from Electronic Arts, but we did get a special, Dead Space shooter that was simplified and dumbed down for Wii controls.
Yeah. It felt like a big advance. It felt like a step forward, even though it was, in a lot of ways, it was a step sideways. But you had a controller now that you could point at the screen and it acted kind of like a light gun. That was exciting for me because it was we hadn't had something like that in years. And we thought, well, what else can you do with this? The sky's the limit. So
yeah, it turned out you could do a lot.
That was exciting to see what kind of crazy ideas, like things like boom blocks, things like, we're going to get to some of these games, but games that you couldn't put on any other platform just because the controller schema was so revolutionary.
No pun intended, I take it.
That's right.
That was the code name for the system, the revolution. And they were right. It was totally, it was a gaming revolution. It changed things in all kinds of ways and, really knocked the industry for a loop. I mean, everybody was trying to get in on this motion craze. I mean, when I first heard about it, I was worried. I was like, okay, how are you going to do the things that I love? How are you going to keep doing The Legend of Zelda and Metroid and Mario and Mega Man and all of these things? So I definitely had concerns. I didn't want to just be dancing around and waving my hands and doing things like that. But in the end, I think they did manage to bring it all together, and they had, the sort of the best of both worlds, when the system was doing, the right sort of thing. Sometimes it totally missed the mark with what it was trying to do, but a lot of the times it worked out really well. What about the Wii name? What did you think when you first heard that it was called Wii?
Oh, I instantly hated it. And I still hate it. I still hate it. And I'm still annoyed that they had the tenacity to call a successor to the thing the Wii U and generate so much confusion that, people didn't even realize it was a new console. So
the Wii U was definitely a bad naming decision.
I would say the Wii was pretty bad too, but there was nothing else named that or anything close to it. It wasn't like Nintendo 2 or the that kind of thing.
Definitely wasn't confusing. It definitely said this is something new and different. But yeah, when I first heard it, I was like, ugh, Wii, I don't know about this. Ha ha ha, pee-pee jokes. In fact, one of my old bosses called me up just to be like, really, Chris, you work at Nintendo now? And they're making their new system named after wee-wee jokes?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I am. It'll probably be fine. But he specifically contacted me just to mock the name.
Yeah, and of course it was fine in the end, but when I first heard it, I thought this is a company that's so insular, so not thinking about the global marketplace, that they're willing to basically name their console the PP.
I think it actually has a lot to do with Apple influence. You know, I think at that time, Nintendo was seeing what Apple was doing, yeah. and they really, really wanted to emulate that in some way. And that's why the Wii came out being all nice and white. And that's why, you know, Apple does all their stuff, the iPhone, the iPad. No, we're going to do it the Wii. It's got two eyes in it, two lowercase eyes. Sure, they're not at the front. They're at the back. We've got two lowercase eyes. So that's like makes it twice as good as anything Apple's doing. So I seriously think that actually had something to do with
it. Yeah, and no press is bad press. So I think there was a lot of conversation about, can you believe they named it this? And I think true. It was on the tip of everyone's tongue by the time that thing launched.
Yeah, I mean, all the fervor and craziness about the silly name died off. And by the time the thing came out, of course, everyone was mostly comfortable with it. So, but yeah, it did come out. It came out on November 19th, 2006. And it had a pretty decent launch lineup, I thought. Were you there on day one? Did you get one right out of the gate? How long did it take for you to get one?
It took me, I want to say it took me 3 weeks to get one. And now I need to mention that I was in line for one at the Universal City Walk in Los Angeles, waiting to get into the giant GameStop there with a lot of my coworkers. We were all producers at G4, the video game network. And I was in line with a bunch of people from X-Play and a bunch of people from Attack of the Show. And we were all in it together, but some people from X-Play were part of the launch, including, you know, Adam Sessler, Morgan Webb. They were doing what amounted to a live remote from inside the store. So there were a lot of X-Play producers way, way, way towards the front of the line who got special treatment because they were shooting in there. So I'm in line with a bunch of friends, and about after, I would say we waited for about 4 hours, and this line was so long. It was well past midnight at this point, and the store had already been opening. We were moving very slowly. Some folks from X-Play came towards the back and said, we got a bunch of extras. We have this many, and we counted heads, and they were like too short for everybody that was waiting.
Oh, no.
And I looked and I said, you guys have it. I'll just wait. I'm a big boy. I can wait. And of course, so yeah, I waited, but I waited in line and I still had to wait. So, my friend who then became my girlfriend, who then became my wife, was one of the people in line who did indeed get one of these launch day Wiis. So, so I was able to play it, but I wasn't able to have it in my house.
Of course, I was at Nintendo at the time, so I did not have too much trouble getting one. I was able to just get one from the store there. And of course, it was an integral part of my work. So we all had systems at our desks so we could play the games and write about the games and talk about all of the new and different features of the system. But yeah, I mean, it was really hard to get early on. I had a bunch of requests from friends, you know, asking if I could get one for them for the holidays, since they just couldn't find it in a store anywhere.
They went fast. It's insane how big of a phenomenon it was, and they didn't have nearly enough to meet demand. And it took them year to get up to a level where you could reliably go into a store and get one. People were lined up outside stores, and people were calling every week for months just to, you know, to get a Wii put aside so that when they came into the store, it'd still be there.
Yeah, obviously, I didn't try to go out to a store and, you know, buy one or anything like that, but I would continuously go into stores that, you know, should have carried them, and I would keep my eye out, and I did not ever see one in a store for over a year. It was crazy. It was ridiculous. Can't believe how hard those things were to find. When it comes to the launch lineup, I like to think that Wii had a fairly decent selection of games. There was a whole bunch of variety. There was a lot of good stuff. Things like Excite Truck, Super Monkey Ball, Red Steel, Rayman Raving Rabbids, Trauma Center. I was a big fan of that series. And then shortly after that, stuff like Elebits and Metal Slug Anthology. Yep. But as far as I'm concerned, there were really two games that really, really mattered at launch. Those being Wii Sports and The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess.
Wii Sports has this crazy distinction of being, I think it's the best-selling, one of the best-selling video games of all time because it was a pack-in. And so
yeah, I'm sure
there
are
so many copies of Wii Sports floating around out there. It's in, I think it's in the top 10 best-selling video games of all time just because the sheer fact it was included in one of the best-selling video game consoles of all time.
I would think it's got to be. Did you play a lot of Wii Sports? Did you sit around during the holidays and, you know, try all this stuff and do the tennis and the
played
golf?
Played the heck out of Wii
bowling?
Sports and never went back to it because it's so silly now, but played, you know, bowling and tennis, and it was a lot of fun to play this with friends. You'd have a group of friends over. You had to make sure you had enough Wii motes and nunchucks to go around. Yeah, you'd have your friends over and it'd be a party. You'd have a party built around this video game console that nobody else had access to. So yeah, it was fun. Mm-hmm.
And it really proved the value of the system too, showing that you could do all these things, just you know, swing it like a tennis racket, and it really works. You know, act like you're rolling a bowling ball, and it really works. You know, the boxing, maybe not quite as much, but, you know, for the most part, it was proving to people that, yes, this Wii thing, this motion control thing is real and it can be a lot of fun. Yeah. Did you see that lots of people who were non-gamers were into it in your personal experience?
Oh, for sure. Tons of people who had never really played games at all were interested in this. And that it's proven by the fact that there's a Wii in almost every household in America because mom and dad wanted to get in on the action of playing games as much as, you know, Junior is. So
yeah, it really truly did deliver on that promise of expanding the audience, and, you know, people in the old folks' homes were playing it. You know, my parents wanted one. My mom, you know, was really into Wii Sports bowling, and, you know, I ended up getting her a system, not at launch. It wasn't until the following year, you know, she saw mine and she really liked it, and so I got her one for the following year. But let me tell you, you know, if you have non-gamers playing it, it becomes pretty clear why you need that wrist strap.
Yes.
Did you have any incidents?
I don't think anyone in my house ever threw a Wii controller at the television, but there are many stories and there's so many YouTube videos of people ruining their television by chucking their Wii remote at the screen.
Yeah, I mean, I hated that wrist strap so much. I especially hated it when I was getting a demo at Nintendo.
They force you to use the wrist strap, yeah.
They're like, okay, be sure you put that wrist strap on. I'm like, come on, I've done this, you know, dozens and hundreds of times.
It's funny you say that, because at G4, we were required, anytime we showed using the Wii remote, we were required to show that wrist strap on their hands.
Oh yeah, if we were showing someone using it, we had to do that. But just playing it to play the game, it felt kind of silly. But when it comes to my parents, I'm glad that thing was on there, because, you know, my mom was playing Wii Sports bowling and she was, you know, just rolling the ball forward, and she caught the front of the Wii remote on a coffee table and it knocked it out of her hand. It flips through the air, flies across the room, and it just barely misses the TV. It ends up landing right behind it in a pile of cables, but it was very close to a massive disaster. So after that, it was all wrist strap all the time.
Yeah, after all these incidents, Nintendo had to offer for free a what amounts to a rubberized, like, case for your Wii remote. So if you did chuck
it. Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah, the rubber sleeve.
So that was something that didn't come with the system initially. You would have to, I think it was on a web page or something, you said how many you needed, and they would send you these rubberized cases for each of your Wii remotes.
Yes, the Wii remote condom. Yeah, I never, ever used that personally on my system, and I never had any incidents, but yeah, I was really glad to have that for my parents. Of course, as I mentioned, the other big highlight of the launch was Twilight Princess, supposed to be a GameCube game. It actually did come out on GameCube, but it came out a few weeks after the Wii version. Mm-hmm. After they moved it over to that system. I mean, that's one of the things I was most excited about when I came to Nintendo, was like, oh, I'm going to get to write about Twilight Princess. And then it ends up getting, you know, delayed by more than a year and moved to a different system. But still, that gave me plenty of time to write about stuff. And having a new Zelda game as a launch title, I mean, it hardly gets better than that. I love the aesthetic. I love the bosses. I love the dungeons. I think that the wolf changing is pretty cool. I think it definitely has some pacing issues, and there are, you know, a few rough spots they could have ironed out. But as far as I'm concerned, I think it's one of the great Zelda games and one of the best launch titles ever made available. I know it's kind of in vogue to hate on this game kind of these days, but no one is going to convince me that it's not a fantastic game. And of course, I did review it, and, you know, I think I gave it a 9 or 9.5, and of course I got tons of hate mail saying, how could you not give this a 10? You're a horrible, horrible human being, Hoff. Go throw yourself off of Kakariko Gorge or something like that.
Yeah, it's such a strong launch title that We haven't had anything like that since the 3DS launched with a pretty weak lineup, and I don't think the Wii U launched with anything remotely as good.
Yeah, that is definitely true. Which games did you get at launch?
this is embarrassing. I got, of course, I had Wii Sports, Raving Rabbids, which was just a bunch of mini games with the rabbits, which was really cute. There's like a rails shooter, a lot of weird stuff that really I think only a kid would like, but I enjoyed it.
First one was all right. It got pretty long in the tooth after that.
I think that was it. And I should also say I worked at G4, so I could play any of the launch titles. We had them in our game lab. Mm-hmm. So I did play Elebits at launch. I thought that was a lot of fun. We're around launch. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was at launch. But
yeah, it came out a few weeks later, but I know I was already playing it, you know, on a pre-release system.
And Elebits is kind of like a hide and seek inside of a house. You're opening drawers, looking under, looking in cabinets for these little dudes, and then you would waggle your controller to collect them.
Mm-hmm.
It was cute.
It was a Konami game back when they made games.
And I had Twilight Princess as well, but it made me sick. It still makes me sick. Motion sick, I should say. So, not that other way, but yes, it makes me motion sick. So I have it's a rough history with the 3D video games. So unfortunately, I can't play Twilight Princess.
Now, when they launched the Wii system, they also launched Virtual Console. Mm-hmm. Did you get any of those right off the bat?
I did. I got...
The initial lineup included Donkey Kong, Mario Brothers, Pinball Soccer, Solomon's Key of all things, Wario's Woods, Legend of Zelda, F-Zero, SimCity, Mario 64, Altered Beast, and Sonic the Hedgehog.
I got The Legend of Zelda and
of course
F-Zero. And they're still on my Wii.
Ah, very nice.
Somewhere up in a closet somewhere.
One of the coolest things about, of course, was that they did have Genesis games, N64 games, Super Nintendo games, and NES games. Then they got TurboGrafx games like almost immediately after that. So it was really cool to be able to have all of those all on one system.
I agree.
Yeah, I would say it was a pretty amazing, successful launch. But, you know, then going from there, you know, the next year rolls along and the system is, you know, sort of starting to come into its own. We're seeing some innovative controller uses in games like WarioWare and Mario Party 8. We're seeing some, you know, more core-focused games like Fire Emblem, Radiant Dawn. We're seeing some cool third-party stuff. Zack and Wiki, the Quest for Barbaros Treasure from Capcom, had some really cool uses of the Wii controls. And I was very happy to get a Knight sequel out of Sega finally arriving on Nintendo platforms. So that was really, really nice. But there was also so much third-party shovelware.
Oh, yeah.
Could you believe how bad it was?
It was a metric ton of that stuff. It was ungodly. It was ungodly.
Yeah.
And it made you think, what have I done? What have I bought into this system full of these baby games, and they're really just poorly produced, just crap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there was good stuff, but the good to bad ratio was amazing. I mean, I think this thing came out and people saw, oh, it's a huge success. It's falling off the shelves. And then they're like, okay, hey, janitor, can you make us a game in like 3 days? Okay, let's do that and we'll put it out. I mean, they had to be done on the most short time frames, the most shoestring budgets. Oh, man, it was just amazing. If you look at, you know, some of these titles, all these minigame collections, you know, it's like 50 crappy carnival games or something that. You know, I saw one, somehow I completely even missed this game when it came out, some horrible Mario Kart knockoff called Action Girls Racing. That's girls with a Z, by the way. Just from the box art, you can tell it is looking terrible. But of course, there were some huge, amazing gems to come out in 2007. One of them is Super Paper Mario, which I believe you are a huge fan of.
I enjoyed
it.
I love 2D side-scrollers. I really enjoyed this game. It was a lot of fun. It had some RPG-ish elements, and then it was a side-scrolling, you know, platformer, which I really got a kick out of. And I love those characters, and I love the Paper Mario series, and I know it wasn't the Paper Mario game a lot of people wanted, but I liked it just the same. I still play it.
Well, the cool thing about it was being able to, you know, twist the world around. Yep. So it went from the flat, you know, paper 2D to a 3D style. And that was very innovative. Of course, it was supposed to be a GameCube game initially.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It was. And I remember one time I was working on a preview for it for Nintendo Power. And then suddenly I get called into my boss's office. He goes, off. We're going to have to cancel the Super Paper Mario preview you have going in this issue. I'm like, oh man, that was going to be my lead preview. What's going on? And he goes, I can't tell you. I'm like, what? Seriously? We can't tell you. And that was like all I knew until, you know, a few months later when they announced it was coming out on Wii. You know, it doesn't feel quite as good as a regular Mario platform, but it did have lots of cool innovations going on. So it was a whole lot of fun. Another one of the big ones released that year was Metroid Prime 3, the long-awaited follow-up to the other Metroid Prime games. And, I mean, that really helped prove part of the value of Wii to me. I mean, we knew it was good at doing a lot of things, but that one proved that, yes, it really is brilliant for first-person shooters. Because I suck at first-person shooters. I just can't aim with the right stick to save my life. You can ask my friends who've seen me try to play. It's hilarious how bad I am. But being able to just use the pointer of the Wii remote and aim and shoot that way, it's amazing. It's a complete revelation, and it fixes all the problems that I tend to have with that genre.
Yeah.
So for me, it was really, really fun. Plus, the game looked great, and it was just a whole lot of fun other ways.
You would think this system would have been a first-person shooter's dream come true, and yet we didn't get any of those great first-person shooters beyond the ones that Nintendo and then crappy Call of Duty ports.
Yeah, we got crappy Call of Duty ports. Sega did try to give us the Conduit, and that was, you know, decent, but it wasn't, you know, like a Halo killer or anything like that. But it did a fine job. But still, there should have been so many more great first-person shooters on the system. Metroid Prime 3, of course, also notable for getting a perfect 10 score in Nintendo Power. Wow. Yeah, I don't agree with that necessarily, but it actually did get a 10. The game I thought did deserve a 10 and did not, by the same reviewer, by the way, was Super Mario Galaxy. That came out in towards the end of 2007, and to this day, it remains one of my all-time favorite games. I just thought that it was amazing in every single way. Just so much fun being able to defy gravity, run around those spherical planets, go to all the different worlds. Looked gorgeous. I mean, both that and Metroid Prime 3, I think, proved that they could do some amazing visual things on Wii that were far beyond what we could get out of the GameCube. And that right there is like, man, I wish they could do this with every game and make all of them, you know, look just, you know, that much better and prove, yes, this is sort of a next generation system. But yeah, Super Mario Galaxy. Yeah, it's a shame you couldn't play that because of your motion sickness. Because, man, it is so good.
Yeah, and I
good.
Did play it a little, enough to make myself sick.
Vomit?
Yeah. And I admit, it's a great, fun game. I just can't play it more than 20 minutes at a stretch.
Well, that's a shame because you are missing out on one of the best. I should also mention how interesting and bizarre things were covering these games at Nintendo Power back in those early days. I mean, I think by the time Mario Galaxy came out, I think we were kind of over it. But early on, like before launch in 2006, as we were getting ready for launch and building up to it, you know, there was a huge concern that people would think, oh, this doesn't look any better than a GameCube game. It doesn't look as good as the competition. Yeah. We have to prove that there really is something special about this that, you know, really is unique and fun. And so we had a mandate. I don't mean dating men. We had a mandate that we had to show the fun in every preview and feature we did. So, you know, if you look back on those issues, and you will see lifestyle photos of
people,
you know,
playing the game,
dudes and friends on the couch fun. They're always smiling with the Wii remote. So much of this stuff. And it was a pain in the butt because even if you're doing like just a half page preview on some minor game, you had to put that in. You'd be like, here's one screenshot and another screenshot. Oh, and here's a lifestyle picture of somebody playing the game.
Oh man.
And yeah, that was a huge concern at the time. We have to show that, you know, there's more to it than just the visual aspect.
Yeah.
So it was crazy.
Yeah, it
could be frustrating at times.
G4, the XPlay team had set up a little room where they could shoot people playing the game and get capture out of the game. So they would be able to marry the footage of the people actually, you know, waggling controllers and the gameplay underneath. Ultimately, that was something they stopped doing. That I think after the first 6 months of this console existing, they stopped this whole system of shooting people while they play the game.
By shooting, I assume you mean filming. Otherwise, that would be pretty brutal.
They found it wasn't necessary, really, to show people pointing and aiming a Wiimote at a screen. It just didn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally what happened. Because at first, we had to do all these lifestyle photos. And then after that, we could just be like, okay, we'll just put in a little graphic, you know, with one screenshot showing how you're controlling this interesting way. And so we just had to have like a little picture of a hand doing some gesture. Yeah. And then after that, you know, everybody had played it. Everybody had experienced it. They all knew what it was. And eventually, we were able to just drop that entirely. But man, it was really nutty at first. And, you know, by the time that, you know, all these games we were talking about come out, you know, Metroid Prime 3, Mario Galaxy, that had totally calmed down. And then we were moving along into 2008. And at this point, it seemed that with Wii, Nintendo was really kind of torn between what route it should go. Should it appeal to the core gamer audience, or should it appeal to the casual audience? Obviously, they were seeing a huge influx of casual users and new gamers, and they were drifting very heavily in that direction. So, on the one hand, we were getting really good gamer-focused stuff, like Wario Land Shake It, which is one of the most beautiful games of its era. Maybe any era. Just such a good-looking,
amazing 2D game. It's like hand-drawn cartoon animation that you play.
Yeah, it is gorgeous.
Until Rayman came along, it was one of the most beautiful 2D platformers I'd ever played.
Yeah, absolutely gorgeous. We also got Super Smash Bros. Brawl that year, and despite the fact that the online was pretty much unplayable, it was still a really, really awesome game. The Subspace Emissary, that massive single-player mode, was reason enough to play it, but you know, also you know the local multiplayer and all the new characters, Solid Snake being in there. You know, not perfect, but amazing, amazing, fantastic game. And Mario Kart Wii also came out around that same time. That's another one you were a big fan of, right?
I like Mario Kart Wii, and I was playing it the motion control way. I know it was stupid.
Really? I was wondering
the control was terrible, but it felt...
I had a very hard time with
it. It was a gimmick, and ultimately you can't finish the game. You can't be good at it and play it with the motion controls. But if you challenge yourself with it, it adds another dimension to the game, and then you can stop playing with the stupid motion controls and go back to steering with the analog stick, which is, thank goodness, they didn't make it just all in on motion controls for it. Or I think it would have been the worst Mario Kart ever. But yeah, I love Mario Kart Wii.
It was
a lot of fun to have four people. It was the only game in my house that you could get four people to play and have a great time doing it.
Yeah, both that and Smash Brothers, we would, you know, gather around at NP and do four-player bouts. Yeah. We didn't do it a ton, but we would do it often enough, and it was definitely fun to do that stuff. But yeah, I would certainly not opt for the motion steering in Mario Kart.
I still
Kart
have those dumb little plastic steering wheels that you put the Wii remote into, the little holster.
Mm-hmm. How many of those did you have?
I had one or two. One came with the game, and then somehow... maybe it was from Emily's, my wife's Wii, that we wound up with a second one of these things. We had two of almost everything when we married.
Understandable, yeah. But in addition to games like that, this was also around the time Nintendo was trying to do their very casual stuff. That was the year that Wii Fit came out. Did you buy into the Wii Fit craze?
I did. We have a Wii Fit balance board in the basement. I can't believe how well that Wii Fit board sold. That got everybody who owned
crazy.
A Wii from the launch, from the first couple years when it was a craze. The craze came back with that Wii Fit pad. It was such a phenomenon. You couldn't buy the thing. It was hard to get. It was really hard to get.
Really? I remember it being hard to get, but I certainly remember everybody owning one. I mean, even I got one, and I don't think I've ever actually used it, but I got one. I just kind of felt compelled. I had to. Yeah, that was crazy. So did you actually use it and use it to get fit?
My wife used it more than I did. I did the yoga stuff and
like
did the running
in
place.
Fighter.
And she got into it. Like, she probably played it for like two. Yeah, like Dulcie. I think she played it for like 3 months and then it just sat. But it was a great way to get healthy and fit. It really did. People were posting success stories on the internet at the time, like, I lost 50 pounds by playing Wii Fit. If you really, really were true to the exercises that you couldn't not lose weight. It was tiring.
Now, what about Wii Music? Did you try that one out?
Did you?
I think I played it at work once, but I certainly didn't buy it because, man, that was a big mistake.
That was a big part of their E3 the previous year. And Miyamoto was behind this. So you thought, oh, how could it be bad? But man, oof, stinker.
It was a baby game for babies. Yeah. And it was basically hardly even a game. So we actually didn't even review that. We refused to review it in Nintendo Power. It hardly even counts as a game. We're just going to skip over this one when it comes to the reviews. And I think that was probably a good call. However, there were some other bright spots in 2008. On May 12th of that year, that was when WiiWare hit North America, bringing with it the ability to get original downloadable games on Wii for the first time. So that was pretty amazing. And one of those was Mega Man 9, which came out just a few months later. Mega Man returning in a classic 2D platformer after having been gone for, geez, like more than 10 years on Nintendo systems. That was pretty darn cool. That was pretty awesome. And I got to break the news on that Nintendo Power also, so that was certainly a highlight for me.
That's a great Mega Man game.
It is. Really hard, super difficult, but still really cool. Glad to see it back. Moving on into 2009, I think they actually had some really good times in this part. This actually might have been the high point of the system's life in many ways, because there was good first-party support, and they actually had some really good third-party support that year. I mean, you don't think of it as a third-party system at all, but then you look at the lineup of what came out that year, and you see things like Mad World, House of the Dead Overkill, Little King's Story, which is one of the best strategy games I've ever played on any platform. Muramasa, which was a beautiful, 2D action game. A Boy and His Blob, which was also completely and utterly gorgeous, and I think really sold the whole premise way better than the NES game ever did. Like, the NES game had a great concept that didn't have a great execution, but I think it was, pulled off absolutely beautifully by Way Forward when they revisited it on
Wii. I didn't realize that was Way Forward. I've never played that that new version of Boy and His Blob. I should check that out.
It was really fun on Wii, and I think it also came out recently on some other platforms. I think it might be on PS4 now or something like that, if you can't get your hands on the original Wii version. Also, Klonoa came out that year. Klonoa was an awesome platformer on the PlayStation 1. And then it got a second shot at life because it wasn't super popular on PlayStation or anything. But then it's like, okay, it's back. It's on Wii. And they did a really, really fun version. Unfortunately, apparently no one played it yet again. I mean, that's a story with a lot of this stuff is that, even though there were still these great games, we also got Silent Hill Shattered Memories and Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles, The Crystal Bearers. So that's just an awesome third-party lineup just from that year. But ultimately, people weren't buying it. Millions of people had Wiis, but it seemed like they were content to have their Wii Sports and Mario Kart, and that was about it.
Yeah, they had bought the system to play these casual games, and they lost their core fan base, I think, for a time, or at least they lost the hardcore players who were moved over to those other platforms.
I don't know. I mean, I think that the hardcore had both, but it just wasn't there. I mean, the companies were making these really good games, but for some reason, people weren't buying them because if they wanted their core stuff, they were going to the Xbox 360 at the time, it seemed. So that was kind of a bummer. But still, first-party stuff did continue to come out. Wii Sports Resort was a big one that year. Metroid Prime Trilogy was not big, but it was really cool, and I was glad I got it. We got to see Mario and Sonic teaming up at the Olympics, which was pretty crazy. Then we got the revival of Punch-Out.
Yeah, I love that game. Did you like Punch-Out? The new Punch-Out?
Oh, yeah, of course. Definitely, definitely. I mean, not quite as much as the older ones, but still, it's a really, really, really cool game. They were, very, very faithful to the concepts of the original. And, maybe you could say a little too faithful since it was pretty much all the same characters and, sort of just a rehash of something we'd seen before. But it was something we'd seen years and years before. It looked so much better and it was different patterns and all that. So I think they did a really, really great job bringing that back. And yeah, I wish that series were still getting new
entries. Yeah, I wish that were the case. I hope we see one of these on Switch.
Yeah, that'd be cool. And that year, we got New Super Mario Bros. Wii, which was the first time that that series had been revived on console. Before that, it was just a handhelds only thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you really liked that one too, right?
I did. I think the art style now feels really old, but then it felt so fresh. You know, you could play it on your DS the same way, but I just love that they gave a new paint job to this game, and the wall jumping mechanic was a lot of fun. I feel like the new Super Mario Wii series introduced some new things into the Mario Brothers universe that we're going to keep seeing in Mario games for years to come, just because they worked and they worked so well.
Yeah, that is true. My only issue with the Wii version of that game is that you had to shake the controller to get that little extra boost in your jump.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
And I just found that infuriating. Like, I couldn't always get to where I wanted it to, and sometimes it would just happen when I didn't want it to, and it would totally mess me up. So that's my one complaint about that. But other than that...
Yeah, that's one of the bigger issues I have with Wario Land Shake It. The same thing where you're forced to shake your Wii remote to butt bash things and stuff like that.
Moving into 2010, there was still a lot of good stuff coming out on Wii, but you could kind of feel at that point that the craze was winding down. There was still tons of shovelware, but there was also great stuff like Tatsunoko versus Capcom, which is my favorite fighting game for the system. I mean, I love Smash. But, Tatsunoko versus Capcom, combining anime properties and Capcom characters and having a tag team fighting game, I just thought, was amazing. Really, really fun. It's too bad the licenses have expired on that, so we'll probably never see another one. But, so very, very good. We also got Monster Hunter Tri that year, Sin Punishment Star successor, Sonic Colors, which is, one of the top Sonic games to have come out in the last 10 years, Epic Mickey. And then stuff like Super Mario Galaxy 2. I loved Super Mario Galaxy 1 so much. I was like, man, how are they going to top this with a sequel? Can they top it with a sequel? Should they have just, left well enough alone? It was so innovative. What else could they do? And they totally proved me wrong. Like, yes, we still have lots of great ideas.
Yeah.
The sequel was just as good as the original. In a gameplay sense, possibly even better. I think that the new power-ups, the rock form and the cloud form, probably make it better gameplay-wise than the original. But for some reason, I still lean towards the first Galaxy as the better game. Just because I like the structure, and I like the hub world, and there's that whole storybook thing with Rosalina that really, really adds to the story. I mean, when you talk about Mario games, you don't really think of story for the most part, but this was like really emotional and really impactful and was just so powerful that even if Galaxy 2 is slightly better gameplay-wise, I still will stand by the original and say it is the superior game just for the way it was presented. Mm-hmm. And a couple other, really big ones from that time were Kirby's Epic Yarn, which was, another gorgeous-looking one. Yep. That yarn aesthetic was just so amazing and wonderful, and it's kind of shocking it was on Wii. And Donkey Kong Country Returns. We finally got the big monkey to come back in a side-scroller.
Yeah, that...
Was that one that you were into?
That I was definitely into. That reveal at E3 that year was just a jaw-dropper. People freaked out. I think the world was primed for a Donkey Kong Country game at that point, and we hadn't seen one in so many years. That was exciting,
and it looked great, and it was super challenging. That's one thing, they brought back the challenge big time.
Oh man, the challenge is crazy. Those minecart sequences, oh my gosh, I can't, just nightmares still.
Yeah, it was rough. It was very rough, but it was very rewarding too. Yeah, I'm kind of glad though that they did offer an easier mode to play the game when they brought it over to 3DS, but still great game. And then we finally got a new 2D-ish Metroid in Metroid Other M.
2D-ish.
Did you play that one much?
I didn't, and I should have. I think this was a game I could have played. What do you think about Metroid the Other M? Because it doesn't have a very positive reputation.
It is not as bad as everyone says. That is my opinion on it. It's a, I would say, controversial opinion at best, because it gets a really bad rap. And there are a lot of, things to not like about it. Like, the story is really terrible. and the characterization and how they present Samus is really terrible. And having to suddenly switch from holding the Wii Remote sideways to pointing at the screen to using your missiles from a first-person perspective, that was a dumb idea too. But despite all that, most of the game is traditional, nonlinear exploration, action, jumping, shooting, platforming, Metroid goodness. And that goes a really, really long way, despite the story problems and the other rough edges. One of these days, I would love to sit down and replay that game and, heck, maybe even make an entire episode just devoted to Metroid Other M. It really is a shame that it wasn't better, but I definitely contend it was not as bad as people say. So
I'll have to check this one out. I may have to pick it up.
Yeah, it might be worth trying out. You could probably get it pretty cheap as well.
All right.
After that year's batch of releases, though, things were definitely starting to wind down. You could feel in 2011 that this was running out of steam.
Yeah.
The third parties that had given us, so much good stuff the last few years, they were like, okay, this isn't panning out for us. There's no reason to make quality games on Wii when you could just pump out something like, 50 baby carnival games and be more profitable that way. So it was really starting to dry up on that front. Meanwhile, Nintendo was moving over to the 3DS.
Yeah.
And we still got a few good games, but their focus was obviously very, very split at that point. Before they had the DS and they were able to do it, but I guess just the extra work they had to go into making a 3DS game, somehow it just wasn't something that they could do that easily. And so we were still getting a few things here and there. We got Kirby's Return to Dream Land, which was really, really fun. I should say on the third-party front, we did get Rayman Origins that
year,
which was a fantastic game.
It looked so much better on the other consoles, but I'm glad we still got it. Oh, it's true. This is where the Wii starts really showing its age. 2011, this console didn't have an HDMI port whatsoever.
No.
So at this point, if you bought a new TV, you would have to hook it up with composite cables. And my gosh, it looked awful on a new TV in 2011. So wow, the Wii really started to get a squeaky, rusty feeling around this time.
I mean, on the plus side, that was the year that The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword came out. And, that kind of seemed like the system's swan song. It was like, okay, here we go. We're going to go out with a bang. We're going out with Zelda.
Yeah, I thought for sure this was the last first-party title and they were just going to shut it down and we'd, see what the next console was.
Yeah, it kind of seemed that way, but they certainly weren't really ready to move on at that point, strangely enough.
Because it was a cash cow.
Yeah.
There was millions of these in people's homes, and if there was a new game, people would buy it for some unknown reason.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know who
was
buying
it. I wasn't.
I'm not sure what was going on, because it seemed like most people, that were the casual users, they did not have a high attach rate. They would just get a couple of things. And, maybe if you had kids, you would buy some of this crappy shovelware. But, it felt like Nintendo thought they were riding this wave of success for several years. They just weren't ready to give it up, weren't ready to go. But by this point, the audience, I think, had really started to move on. When it comes to Skyward Sword, though, did you play that one much? Did you enjoy it?
No, I never played it.
I certainly did. I played a lot of it. I reviewed
yeah.
that one at the time. Once again, got complaints. I had not given it a perfect 10. But it was definitely not a perfect 10. Overall, I would say it was really fun, and I loved some of the story aspects and some of the characters. I love that version of Zelda, as I'm sure I've mentioned on this show many times before. But I did not love the way that the world was divided up into, these very distinct, separate areas. And you couldn't just, explore to walk from one to the other. It was just, nope, you got to go up into the sky and then come back down again. And then the controls, looked great on paper, but just once in a while, they just wouldn't really work properly. And the motion controls just kind of felt, broken at times.
Even with the Motion Plus adapter dealy that you were forced to buy.
Yeah, you were forced to use it with that game. Yeah, I mean, just occasionally, 85% of the time it worked great. But for that 15% of the time, when it didn't, it was just super frustrating.
Yeah.
And you'd be forced to recalibrate it, and just sometimes it couldn't read your motions. Again, it's not a major thing, But it certainly, you know, prevented me from enjoying it to the fullest extent. I mean, I would still give the game an excellent recommendation. I stand by my review entirely. But you're having to cope with those, you know, control inconsistencies could be pretty frustrating. So, yeah, after that came out, it just kind of seemed like, you know, what do we do? What do we
what
do?
What do we do?
At Nintendo Power, it's like, man, okay, there's no new console for a while yet. We don't know what's going on here. What are we going to be writing about? Well, I guess the 3DS is out there, but, you know, that wasn't exactly going strong at that point.
No, and screenshots of the 3DS are garbage. So the pictures, how do you sell? Yeah.
Oh, they didn't. Would you stop?
I think they look bad, but...
I think you look like garbage.
Hey, I love my 3DS. It's probably my favorite console of all time. Screenshots of a 3D system in a magazine are
just we used to have to put... Yeah, like that when we had to put labels on every single screenshot saying, actual screenshots in 3D.
Yeah.
You can't tell here. Yeah, where it was... Oh, man. Mm. I don't even want to start talking about that.
Yeah.
But where I was going with that is that it was really the fans that made it so... It was not a complete and utter disaster after 2011, after Skyward Sword, because there were still these great games that came out in Japan and that we had known about and we were expecting to come out in the U.S. I'm talking about Xenoblade, later known as Xenoblade Chronicles, and I'm talking about The Last Story. Because we heard about these games, we knew they were supposed to be coming out, but Nintendo of America really didn't seem interested. But there was this huge fan outcry. Plus, there was localization efforts going on over in Europe. So, there was this thing called Operation Rainfall, which I'm sure a lot of people have heard about. And they were really pushing and campaigning to ask Nintendo, please bring these out, please bring these out, please bring these out.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, we don't know how much of an impact that really had. But we did finally get Xenoblade Chronicles in the U.S. from Nintendo. And then Xseed was able to publish The Last Story. And those are hands down two of my all-time favorite Wii games. I mean, the Wii scene was a total wasteland in 2012, but those two bright spots, they really, really helped out.
Yeah.
Two big, amazing role-playing games. Xenoblade just being this massive exploration-based adventure. You know, so much to see and do and explore. And The Last Story, you know, sort of being on a smaller scale. I mean, it still felt very epic, but it all took place mostly in this one city. And so it felt very personal and very intimate. And it just had some very unique gameplay systems going on. Between those two, it really scratched a lot of itches that the Wii had not done at that point. So
yeah.
I was really, really happy to see those games. If you have not played them, I do highly recommend them both.
Although with Chronicles, they didn't barely make enough to meet demand. And still, Xenoblade Chronicles is one of the most expensive games to buy secondhand on the Wii.
Well, the good news is that it's also available on new 3DS. Mm-hmm. And you can just download the original on your Wii U if you happen to have that.
Yeah.
And they also did reprint it eventually.
Oh, did they?
But yeah, if you...
For the Wii?
If you did not, I believe so. But yeah, originally, if you hadn't pre-ordered from GameStop, because GameStop was the only place selling it, if you hadn't done the pre-order of that, you were probably not going to be able to get one. Yeah, that was a very limited print run, because, I don't know, Nintendo of America just didn't seem to have any faith in that one. Still, it did come out, and it was fantastic. And I was very happy that we got it all, really.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you would think, well, that's the last hurrah, because that's when the Wii U came out at the end of that year. You know, Wii seemed kind of over. It seemed like that crazy run its course. All the people who were into these casual games, all this expanded audience, well, by now they all had smartphones. They're playing free games from now on. There was no need for them to buy a new Nintendo system to get their casual games. Mm-hmm. They were, you know, just built right into their phone. And that completely, you know, eroded Nintendo's audience. They did a great job expanding the audience, but unfortunately they couldn't manage to keep that audience. But lo and behold, that was not the end for Wii. In 2013, we saw the third Operation Rainfall game, Pandora's Tower, come out. And I totally thought that would be the last noteworthy game on Wii. But no, no, there was still more. You know, of course, there was some, licensed junk. but we also got more Skylanders games.
Wii Skylanders.
But, I mean, they still count as games, though. They're actual real games. They're not just some shovelware garbage. And then last year, we got the Wii version of Rodea the Sky Soldier bundled with the Wii U game. Not exactly, you know, amazing and awesome and groundbreaking, But it was still a new Wii game, and it actually was pretty darn good, especially the Wii version. The Wii version is actually better than the Wii U version. So, that's
crazy.
Something worth noting. Yeah, because that was the one that was made by the original co-creator of Sonic the Hedgehog, Yuji Naka. He was, in charge of that Wii version. And then I don't think he was directly involved with the Wii U version. But anyway, I'm getting off topic here. The amazing thing is that even 10 years after the Wii launched, there are still new games. A brand new game actually came out last month.
I can't believe that. There's not even a Wii. There's barely a Wii section in the store anymore.
Well, I know there shouldn't be, but Just Dance 2017 actually came out on Wii.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's amazing. 10 years after the system launched, they are still making software for it. And especially that's a third party. I mean, that's just ridiculous. Yeah, Ubisoft. Yeah. Still bring out those dancing games.
I mean, this is akin to, imagine in 2013, there still had GameCube games on the shelves. Wouldn't you lose your mind?
That would be pretty crazy.
Yeah.
But it goes to show just what kind of power and what kind of success and what kind of longevity this system has, that we're still seeing games this far into its life cycle.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Certainly, we ended with a whimper and not a bang, but despite that, despite the shovelware, despite the fact that some mistakes were made along the way, the system still sold more than 100 million units worldwide and has some of the best games Nintendo has ever made. And for those reasons alone, I would call it a huge success. So, happy 10th birthday, Nintendo Wii.
I agree.
Well, I think that does it for this week's big topic. But before we finish off the show, I do believe there is still time for a dramatic reading. This time it's going to be an excerpt from the manual from another one of the games available on NES Classic. In this case, Kirby's Adventure. Light years away, on a tiny star not visible from Earth, is the magical, peaceful place known as Dreamland. The beings that inhabit this wondrous world live a blissful existence that centers on eating, sleeping, and playing. An example of their carefree customs include the traditional after-lunch feast nap.
What?
After they awaken from their nap, the Dreamlanders discuss their dreams and fervently hope that each other's fondest wishes come true. One day, a young Dreamlander named Kirby awoke from his after-lunch nap feeling terrible. What happened? He wondered to himself. I didn't have any dreams during my lunch nap. This lack of dreams left Kirby feeling very uneasy. After talking to some of his friends, he found that the problem was much more serious than he had thought, for they had not experienced any dreams either. Something must have happened to the Dream Spring, they exclaimed in unison.
What happened to the Dream Spring?
Well, something bad happened to the Dream Spring, of course. And, I wouldn't be surprised if King Dedede was involved.
A fat penguin with a sledgehammer?
That's actually not the end of the story in the manual. It goes on for several more pages.
It does.
But, yes.
Maybe you save that for another episode. Yeah, there's no story to speak of when you play the game. You don't really know why that tree is throwing acorns at you.
Well, I'm afraid the manual does not explain why Wispy Woods is such a jerk either. But we do know why Kirby's going on his quest, and that is
to rescue the dreams? I don't think that's really a worthwhile crusade. I mean, really. there's no stakes.
Yeah, well, maybe if you were around Pink Puffball, you would have a better appreciation of dreams.
I don't think Kirby, I don't think he's the good guy in this game, to be honest. All these other creatures are otherwise look like they're not there to hurt anyone. They're just going about their business. And if their business involves, breathing fire or shooting sparks out of their bodies, so be it. Why does Kirby feel like it's his business to suck these people up and steal their powers? I love this Kirby game, by the way. I think it's one of the best. I think it's one of the best games on that NES Classic.
Anyway, that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can also follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at ChrisTheHoff, and you can find Scott at PlasticBugs. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com. And if you enjoy the podcast, it would be swell if you would give us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Scott Michella,
Kirby's a monster,
and our good friend Birdo, ow, we will see you next time.